I'd call the meeting of this Health and Human Services work group to order, and if I could ask those of you who are collecting things to please do it very quietly.
There's no sound.
Mic on?
Is there sound?
Yeah, there's sound.
Yeah, working.
Thank you. Let's begin first of all, members of the working group. There's been several amendments handed out. The intention, I think, is just because once in a while we have these around our packets, but it's hard to remember to bring them, so this should be intended largely as sort of cleanup. In no way does it imply when we adopt an amendment that we're adopting a related section, but we ought at least to clean up those areas. So we'll march through, I'll identify the amendment, and then we'll try to have someone who understands it to explain. So. First of all, the amendment A-120, and to the particularly to the Senate members, there had been suggestions of making the language a little more readable, and as I understand, that's exactly all that's been done in the A-120 amendment. So maybe if staff could just explain that amendment.
The A-120 amendment would replace the A-117 amendment, and the only differences are just technical to make it read a little bit better. There's a small difference on page 1, line 24. The term if was replaced with whether or not. And then there were a few words removed on page 2 just to make it fit with the way it read there a little bit better. And then a small difference on page 3, again, just to make it read a little bit different.
And again, members, just to remind, put it in state. It doesn't have anything to do with adoption, actually, of the related section.
I would move adoption of the A-120 amendment.
Senator Bergen moves adoption of the A-120 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Let's move on to the A-78 amendment. And I believe this is an amendment suggested by DHS, clarifying how the GAMC spend down operates, moves reference for the PRH residents on GAMC spending down, using the cost of remedial services to a new section being added in that GRH chapter that was suggested by DHS. Any questions? Senator Bergen.
Mr. Chairman, is this just moving this to a different location, or is the language itself different?
Is there someone? Mr. Chun?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bergen, the language on lines 5 through 11 is new language that clarifies, but then the second section, line 24, it's basically moving a reference to the proper GAMC section dealing with the remedial care. I'm sorry, the proper GRH section dealing with the remedial care spend down. So it's moving it, I think, to a better location.
And the reason for the need for the new language, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chun, is?
Mr. Chun?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bergen, this was language suggested by the department, and I believe it's just explaining in statute how a spend down would work.
And they felt it was needed because?
Is there someone from the department that could respond to Senator Bergen's question on this? Good morning. Welcome.
Karen Gibson, Department of Human Services. On this issue, it basically is just a clarification. We haven't expressly put in statute previously, even when we had the GAMC spend down option, how the spend down actually worked. That language was not there. So it's just basically if a GAMC spend down is restored, it would be clarification of how it would work.
Right. Madam Chair,
thank you.
I mean, Master Chair, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Loy.
Could Ms. Gibson? I was just wondering, perhaps everyone in this room knows except me, but what's the definition of excess income? How is that different from your income?
It would be income that exceeds the income standard for the program. So if someone's income is above the income standard, they would have the option of spending down, using medical expenses to meet that amount.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would move adoption of the A78 amendment.
Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A78 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. So next to the A88 amendment. And this was also suggested by the department, and this is dealing with the Minnesota CARE definition of income for non-farm self-employed. So it bases the starting point of calculation on the self-employment tax form rather than the 1040 tax form. Any questions, members?
I would move adoption of A88.
Senator Burnham moves adoption of the A88 amendment. Any discussion?
Can you explain this a little more? I guess.
Me? No.
No.
But if you would like, I'm sure we could ask someone to come forward.
I would like that.
I think it's a matter of a different reference rather than the tax code. It refers to the, let's let the expert explain. Welcome to the committee.
Karen Justo, Department of Human Services. Mr. Chair, Senator Coring, the MA methodology starts out by using the self-employment tax form, and it adds all the components of income to come together to a sum. The Minnesota CARE calculation starts with the adjusted gross income at the bottom of the 1040 and subtracts out things to come to a sum. So it's really just the manner in which we calculate the income is different. You come to the same income calculation if we're using MA methodology for Minnesota CARE. It's just the way that you get there needs to be through the self-employment tax form rather than the 1040. Does that make sense?
Okay. Senator Bergman?
My understanding was that you don't come out at the same place.
Yeah, you don't.
My understanding is you come out at a slightly different place.
That's right.
And that slightly different place would have the impact of slightly increasing premiums.
Exactly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bergman, you're correct. The proposal in using MA methodology changes the income calculation. This amendment, however, does not cause an additional change to the calculation.
Thank you for that clarification.
Further questions? Seeing none, motion was for adoption of Amendment 888. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Next amendment is the A98 amendment. This is further, I think, clarification in the COLA. I think we've had a sort of a sequence. I don't know if I want to try to go through all of what this says. What I'm told is that matches the tracking that we had on October 1st, 1% plus a quality add-on. The amendment inserts the 2.2553 COLA. This would be in the House side percentage into the ICFMR and community-based COLA. And then deletes the House rider. I believe part of this was the Senate's recommendation that instead of having it in a rider, that we put it in statutory language.
I would move adoption of the A98 amendment.
Senator Berger moves adoption of the A98 amendment. Any discussion? None. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Next would be the A94 amendment. This amendment deals with transition to a new nursing home reimbursement system. What my notes say is that for the first 3 years, facilities receive the greater of either the September 30th, 2005 rate or the rate determined under the new system. The amendment makes it clear that the September 30th, 2006 rate is increased by 1% to reflect the COLA. And then also clarifies that the rate is the operating rate. And this was suggested by the Department of Human Services.
I would move adoption of the A94 amendment.
Senator Berger moves adoption of the A94 amendment. Any discussion? None. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Next, and this is sort of random order, but the one that's on the next on my pile is the A67 amendment. And I believe Representative, this was a Senate amendment. I believe, though, that, let's have it offered, and then I think there's going to be some discussion to it.
I would move adoption of the amendment.
Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A67 amendment. Representative Aber, did you have?
If the Senator Berglund would incorporate into her motion a technical change on page 2, line 6, change the $237,000 to $137,000, and change the $192,000 to $92,000. If we don't do that, this will reduce the four-year deficit that's projected, given all the things the board was supposed to do, by $400,000. And I think with the changes we've been suggesting, we keep them somewhat whole. So,
I would incorporate those numbers into the amendment.
And then there is an item which I personally consider as part of our global discussion. It's kind of a new one, the first time I've seen it. And so I consider it more than just kind of putting the language in order. And that is lines on page 1, lines 41. I believe it's through 49. I don't know if the other lines are related to that or not. But it appears to me is sort of an attempt to pick up the Center of Nursing. I realize that it doesn't have that title in it. And I think in fairness to our negotiation process that we ought to defer on that piece. So I would respectfully suggest, and I would be willing to offer an amendment to strike that section, and if staff can indicate to me whether there's any other language in this that is related to that section.
Mr. Chairman, I would withdraw my motion.
Senator Berglund withdraws the motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Aber.
Just by way of alternative, if this could be adopted into the Senate language and then but not be adopted today, that would accomplish probably the goal of keeping that issue out in front of us, but yet this could be put to rest in terms of having the amendment floating around. Would that be an alternative, Madam Chair or Mr. Chair?
That would be an alternative.
And Mr. Chair, the section you're concerned about is on lines 48 and 49. And this is to the Senate language, which would put the Senate language in order as they would like, as we've been doing, and then you could continue the negotiations on the whole topic.
Representative Abler, that may be a fair. I just want to be sure. Let's see. We are adopting then. I'm sorry. The amendment does direct itself to the Senate language. That's what the line 3 is. Well, let me just be sure if staff can help me. I believe that that's correct, that this only amends then the Senate language.
Yes.
Am I correct in that?
Chairman, the very last thing on page 2 is amending the House language.
Down here for...
Clarifying that the $50,000 the House has for the professional services unit, the House was $50,000 above the Senate, and clarifies what that money
is to be used for. Okay, and I think in the spirit, and I apologize, Senator Berglund, I think it's a reasonable counteroffer. In the spirit of what we've been doing in the other items where we're saying we're not adopting the sections, but we're bringing them into the form that either the House or the Senate wishes, I would withdraw my intent to offer an amendment and accept it in its current form.
I would reoffer the A67 amendment then, incorporating the number changes on line 6.
Senator Berglund reoffers her amendment A67, incorporating the amendment offered by Representative Abler on page 2, line 6, changing the $237,000 to $137,000 and the $192,000 to $92,000. I'm wondering if we could just have a brief explanation on page 1, lines 12 to 17 is a appropriation of $30,000 on the dental appropriations.
Mr. Chairman, in working with Representative Abler, what we have done here is to adopt the recommendations that he made. The difference here is that we've taken out any references to salary increases, since we're not probably going to see a salary increase for regular state employees. And we have just delineated the other items that each board had. I think with the exception of, I can't remember which one it is.
The dentist?
There was one of them that was asking for additional travel expenses for their board, and we deleted that.
Okay. Senator Berglund, and maybe somewhat to Representative Aber, is there any interaction on that Board of Dentistry with the oral health project? Did that change the balances and the availability of money to do this?
I don't know exactly. I think that they had, maybe I want to ask one of the fiscal staff. Maybe on the Senate side there probably. See, Mr. Marks isn't here, but is the Senate staff aware of that?
Yeah, we're digging out our magnifying glass.
Yeah. It's a relatively small appropriation, so I'd be surprised.
It's in small print, too.
You can borrow my cheaters. They're 1.25, so that helps anybody.
Right, but what they're concerned about is that we have enough money.
That would be the dental facility.
Yes. No. Thank you, Lori.
Ms. Chair and Madam Chair, perhaps given the small number, so just adopting the language and not adopting
the
text,
so
we
could
adopt it for now.
If someone could maybe come back
and then
Mr.
Marks
that, I'd be
is
fine with
well
that.
Aware, and then
yeah,
Mr.
We'll,
Green is
we'll
well aware.
Yeah, we'll keep working on it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Any further discussion on the A627 amendment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
The answer is there is a problem.
Okay.
To figure out.
The next one I have is the A59 amendment. I believe this is a Senate amendment, so maybe if you can offer it and then explain it to the group.
Right. This is just correcting a technical error that was in the amendment we adopted the other day regarding the disproportionate share program. And the difference is that this amendment eliminates the IGT-2 reimbursement contingent on the elimination of the IGT payments from the entities. So it's very technical.
Okay. Senator Berglund moves adoption of the A59 amendment. Any further questions? Senator Sloan.
Mr. Chair, could Senator Berglund explain that a little further, how, what impact this has?
Senator Berglund?
It's just, Mr. Chairman and Senator Sloan, it's just a matter of the timing. We didn't want to repeal the payments before the IGT was repealed.
Further discussion?
No.
Hearing none, all those in favor of the A59 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. That amendment is adopted. The next would be the A121 amendment. And Representative Aber, you want to offer that amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is
Representative Aber moves the A121 amendment. Representative Aber.
And Mr. Chair, perhaps you could adopt this if the Senate is willing. Let me explain it and then see if they're interested in going ahead with that. This is a somewhat of a technical change, although there's substance to it. This was in the bill that passed Senate File 1204 with all the licensure stuff. In keeping with the kind of tight rein on sexual conduct with former clients or dating and so on, different boards have different criteria. In the language that we passed, which is all the language, we recodified the whole social workers licensure bill. And the language that you see is existing language was all part of the recodification. Came to light that there was some interest in having an additional prohibition against any interaction with the social worker and their clients for 2 years as an absolute prohibition. Then once that they would choose to become engaged in a relationship, sexual or otherwise, dating, some kind of romantic relationship, then they would have to meet a list of criteria which are in the current law. But this amendment would add a two-year absolute prohibition against that, and it's not uncustomary to do such a thing, especially in those kinds of professions that have a kind of a engaging, closely connected interaction, such as a social worker or a counselor, et cetera.
I'm aware when after that was passed and people were reviewing it that there was some concern, because I think that in the language that was passed, it would have appeared as though it allowed that, those kind of relationships without any time factors involved. And
correct. And the board is here if you would like any testimony, and maybe you wouldn't like testimony.
Senator Berglund, to the senators, any indications of willingness on this?
I think this is a good amendment to correct a concern that at least some people had with the original language. Yeah.
So Representative Abler has moved the A121 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And then I have the A128 amendment. And Representative Abler, sure. I believe this is your amendment as well.
Maybe we can just adopt this section, but at least if we could adopt the language. We'll see how our luck is running. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members, there's a proposal on the House side, although it's not any kind of a partisan proposal or parochial. It has to do with allowing the City of Ramsey to establish a three-level senior housing project with apartments and senior living and assisted living and then a small nursing home attached. The Crestview Nursing Home has 100 beds or 98 beds on layaway. And their thought was to reactivate some of those beds and put them at this site. The City of Ramsey has no nursing home beds whatsoever. There is some concern on the part of the nearby nursing home about the competition for those beds. And I'm fully aware of that and right in the middle of the arguments of my own backyard. And as part of the effort to state those concerns and actually address them in a really positive way, the most proximate nursing home, Twin Rivers, in the proposal is given 33 beds, now reduced to 25 in this amendment, which they would place elsewhere, and they would even be allowed to move their entire operation. This amendment moves their entire operation further away from Elk River, which is one of the sites that has a concern, and further north of Coon Rapids, which is two sites that have concerns. In an effort to create some nursing home beds in a part of the county that has absolutely none, either Andover or Oak Grove or someplace like that, but it's far off in the more hinterland. And then in addition, this amendment would cancel the status of the remaining 48 beds that are on layaway, so this discussion won't happen again about those beds. I think no other county of the state would be having such a discussion but Anoka County, given that it has the least number of nursing home beds per capita in either the over 65 or over 85 populations. And in particular, I think this makes sense given the move toward the aging in place that is underway and some of the improvement of our nursing home stock, as well as this that would have the benefit of decentralizing some of these nursing homes. So we leave Anoka with one nursing home, Ramsey with one nursing home, Andover or someplace north with a nursing home, which has none now. Well, that part of the county has none, and then I think it would also reduce some of the competition issues. So if at least today, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, we could adopt this in the House language, so you'll be considering the right proposal.
Well, I think this kind of is in order, like an author's amendment, to put it in the form that the author would prefer, notwithstanding, again, we're not adopting the section, so that remains to be discussed. But I also sense that you suggested to us that this moves the proposal closer to those people who had some concerns.
Correct.
Senator Berman?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler, have you shared this amendment with the other facilities in this area of the state?
Representative Abler?
Not lately, Madam Chair, no.
Okay.
I've heard a good deal from them, and I think this takes into consideration their concerns. Especially should it come to full fruition, what would happen, especially Guardian Angels, which has concerns in the Elk River world, this would actually remove 57 beds further away from the existing ones from the Twin Rivers Center, further away from them. 57 would be traded for 25, so it actually would reduce their competitive thing.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bergman?
And Representative Abler, I've heard from all of these facilities also, and so I just wondered if they had seen this amendment. I think it might be a good idea to circulate it among the parties that have been involved in the discussion so far.
It's a point well taken, Madam Chair. I'll work on that.
Representative Abler moves the A128 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
There being two yeses and no
yeses. I believe that's all the amendments that we had for today. Senator Hall?
Well, I think Senator Laurie had one, but...
Madam Chair, Senator Berglund, Mr. The chairman asked me to hold off until later on that.
And for purposes of full disclosure, it's probably unlikely that it might be handled separately, but I think it's 90-some pages, so if it did happen to be, I have no objections at all to it. I'm prepared to accept it. I just thought maybe let's wait until the time's right for it. So that was the reason for suggesting we defer. Plus, I don't think the physical amendments hear it right now.
Correct.
Senator Saul.
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment to Article 5, and it regards the Wilmer Treatment Center, which has been sold now, and just some provisions for the employees during that transition. May I offer that?
Surely. Yep.
Okay, and do we have that? Okay. This is the A61 amendment.
Senator Sloan, just to remind me, is that a section that we have adopted?
I don't know.
I just don't remember for sure. I mean, it's a little different story if we're amending something that the House and Senate have already agreed to, as opposed to a section that is still not agreed to.
Maybe our staff can help us. Yeah. If we adopted this section.
Mr. Chairman, this amendment is adding three new sections to the bill. So
I see. So
okay.
You know, we can adopt it and not adopt. I mean, we can just add it to the Senate language without adopting the.
That's fine. I didn't catch that. Good point. I believe it's been distributed now, so Senator Sloan, would you like at least go to explain the amendment?
Basically, what this does, there are three provisions. The first one provides that a person leaving employment at Wilmer is governed by the state's negotiated enhanced separation package, which takes place on August 1st of this year, even if the RTC ceases to be a state facility before that date. And then Section 25 allows a person whose position at the RTC transfers from state employment to the Kandiyohi County employment remain a member of the Minnesota State Retirement System unless they elect to join the PERA, and that election needs to be made within 6 months of becoming a county employee. It's irrevocable. And then Section 26 establishes an early separation incentive for qualifying employees, and the qualifications and incentives are described in the section. They may be offered only at the sole discretion of DHS and would be paid solely by funds that are made available by the commissioner. And that incentive expires on June 30th of 2007.
Senator Sloan, has the Department of Human Services and perhaps even the Department of Employee Relations had a chance to see this and react to the proposal?
I'm wondering if there is somebody here to speak to this.
Is there someone from, first of all, the Department of Human Services that has had a chance to see this and react? I don't mean to have a full sort of hearing because we understand we're not adopting the section, but it might be at least interesting if there is any reaction. I guess we don't have someone here, so that'll need to be obviously a follow-up before we have discussion on this.
Mr. Chairman, this looks very familiar to me when we closed the regional treatment centers in Moose Lake. If I'm remembering correctly, this is sort of the similar thing that we did when we closed the RTCs there. Yeah. But that was like years ago. So,
Senator, I'm well aware, and I've seen things similarly. But I'm also aware that there's typically two sides to the parties here, and this appears to be sort of representing the employee organization side, which it's fair. But obviously, we'll need to hear from the other side as well. Senator Sloan?
Mr. Chair, I'll run it past the department.
Any further discussion to this amendment? All those in favor of the A61 amendment, understanding that we're just putting it into the Senate language and not adopting it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. That it? All right, well, then let's move on to the next order of business. I had contacted Senator Berglund's office and asked if Senator Berglund and the senators would take us through the latest Senate offer that had been made so that we could understand. We've tried a little bit having reviews for the public information and frankly lose quite a few holes. So, Senator Berglund, if you don't mind taking over and helping us out with that.
Mr. Chairman and members, the horizontal sheet has consolidated the various offers just to make it not so difficult to understand. It also has taken into account the problem that we're facing with the health match delay. And so it balances all those things out. And so what it shows you here is from the general fund reductions of $123 million. It shows our reform plan being implemented effective January 1 of 07, and it would be a manual operation until Health Match went into place. It can be done as a single application since the counties take the applications for general assistance medical care today, and the same information is required on both applications. So it shows $132 million savings there. We're showing here a $36 million reduction in other health care access fund proposals that we had made, and it shows $131 million cost to the health care access fund. When you take all of those general fund savings, it leaves us $156 million away from the governor, and it leaves the Senate with $155 million of general fund reductions. Excuse me, $255 million in general fund reductions.
Where's that? Where's the $255?
Senator Berglund, could you take us through, I think you just said $255 million reductions in the general fund.
No, why don't you have the 100?
Now, is that from the original Senate position, the original bill coming into this, at the conference committee time?
Yes.
Okay, and then Senator Berglund, of that, because that's general fund, if we could break that down, would that then include $131 million of that would be the proposal to move into the health care access fund? So it would be spending out the health care access fund?
$132 million of it is general fund savings. $131 million is health care access fund savings. Spending. It's not unlike the governor's proposal in the sense that he is spending health care access fund money on things that otherwise would have been general fund expenditures and getting some general fund savings. The difference with this proposal is that it does give people a medical home on a long-term basis rather than just taking a program and putting it into the healthcare access fund to pay for it.
I understand that one. I just want to be sure that I was correct in my understanding that I hadn't changed any. And then Senator Berglund, maybe as kind of a precursor to this, it's a little hard to sort of read this in, but I'm assuming that the spending level is dependent on some revenue source in addition. And I know that that's changed over time, so can you identify for us what the revenue amount and source is?
There's a very small amount of revenue that is needed for the proposal in this biennium. I think it's about $6 million, and it would come from the provider Medicaid tax. The governor did transfer that money into the Health Care Access Fund in his proposal in a much larger amount. We're transferring only $6 million of it during this biennium. There would be a need in the next biennium for a larger transfer of that money. It's money that's actually earned by the Healthcare Access Fund, so you know there's really nothing wrong with having it be in the Healthcare Access Fund, but that isn't where it's been deposited up till now.
Senator Berman, I was referring more to, if I understood it right, I thought that this assume a 75-cent tobacco fee, that $380 million being used in the Senate's Health and Human Services proposal. Is
no.
that still the case, or is that not the case anymore?
No. We don't have any cigarette tax that's actually allocated or earmarked for this part of the budget.
Well, Senator, I don't mean just this
there
part.
There is on the governor's side, but on our side, we are not necessarily tying these reductions to the funding for the remainder coming from the cigarette tax at this point in time. We had earlier done that, but we've made additional reductions since then. So, I mean, if anybody wanted to do that, we could still do that, but it would be a lower amount than the 55 cents that we earlier had in an earlier proposal. I don't know what it would be exactly, but...
Well, Senator Berglund, I'm just trying to make sure that the math makes sense to me. At least in its original form, the Senate was something like $400 to $500 million higher than the governor's numbers. And what I see so far,
if you look at the top line,
okay,
Mr. Chairman, and you'll see the column Senate Governor difference 511. It's in the second to the right hand column.
Okay.
So that's the starting point of what the difference was. You subtract from that $100 million from the governor's side, and that gets us to $411. And then you subtract from the Senate side the $254, and that gets us down to a $156 million difference.
So, Senator Berglund, to be accurate, then there is a dependence if you're adopting or expecting the governor's of $100 million of revenue from the health impact fee, because that's what that $100 million was coming from.
Well, Representative Bradley, we're just comparing the offers that have been on the table so far on each side. You have to do that to figure out what the difference is, and, you know, so...
Yeah, I think, Senator Berglund, what I'm trying to do is simply understand how the Senate funds your proposed spending. And I know it gets a little bit tricky if you look only general fund, but I've been trying to do that, and I understand that you've got $131 million more to spend from the healthcare access fund with the shifted GAMC people. You've got $132 million of something I want to come back to, but it's called sort of the general fund savings. You've got apparently that $6 million provider tax transfer for this next biennium, but that, as you indicated, would be more.
It's so embedded in these numbers.
Yeah, so that brings me, if I look at those from a general fund point of view, that's you know, that's roughly $270 million. $270 million does not cover the expenses above other available revenues. So it seems like there's got to be, for the Senate to have the money to spend, as you're proposing, some additional revenue. And that's what I'm trying to figure out, is what is that additional revenue?
At this point in time, we have we are not linking any particular source of revenue to the $156 million difference remaining between the Senate and the governor. The Senate has agreed to incorporate into the global proposals that we are making the 75-cent cigarette tax that the governor has proposed, but it's not earmarked at this stage to any particular part of the budget.
And Senator Bergman, I'm struggling a little bit just simply trying to track the numbers. I was up to, well, I suppose first of all, we might try to identify what the amount of extra spending revenue. I mean, you know, we know based on the forecast how much money was available going in, and I guess I can only judge it by the fact that there was that $500 million or so difference. And you're telling me that you have another $156 million where you're just saying you're going to need revenue, but it's not been specifically articulated as to what that revenue would be? Anybody?
I believe the offers that have been made by the Senate to the governor and the House have articulated all of the revenues for all of the proposals. You know, education, the various other bills that are not resolved yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Senator Burton, that's why I was trying to track. In the previous offer, it was very clear that the Senate was including an expectation of $380 million of revenue from the health impact fee. What's not quite clear to me is now, has that changed? And I think you were indicating it has changed, but I haven't been able to reconcile that hole. If that money is not coming in, then what is it made up by? But first of all, as I said, I had tracked in prior, and because it showed very clearly on the language of the Senate's offer that there was an assumption of $380 million of revenue from the health impact fee. And I'm still trying to understand, is that still part of the Senate's plan for health and human services spending?
It's part of the Senate's global proposal for revenues. It isn't tied to health and human services particularly at this point in time. Mr. Chairman, I guess, you know, my understanding of what you wanted me to do today was to explain to you where we are at with our latest offer in regard to the health and human services spending, and that's what this sheet does. If you need more than that, then, you know, we need to get somebody else in here besides me to help you understand it.
Well, I think you're correct in what I'd asked, and all I'm trying to do is simply understand it. This is structured a little bit differently than I might, but that's fine. But what I can't quite bridge is sort of the question of where do the revenues come from and where do they go? The where they go is probably fairly clear, because it looks to me like, except for the question of the general fund savings that you brought up, and I'll come back to that, outside of that, it's per the Senate's bill, and that's understandable. But what I'm still struggling with in this latest offer is where the revenues to support that spending are coming from. And I'm maybe what I'll do is sort of forego that for the moment. Let me come back to Senator Berglund and another specific question. You had indicated, and I believe that does show on your chart, $132 million of savings, reforms, whatever. But it looked as though that's part of the way that you were balancing this. Do you have any details on what that $132 million is?
Yeah, Mr. Godfrey can break it up apart for you a little bit.
Mr. Godfrey?
Mr. Chair, committee members or work group members, the general fund line that has $132 million in savings for the health match delay and the reform plan is made up of three components. The first is a savings in 07 of $27 million for the reform plan once it's implemented. That's the amount it will save beginning January 1st of 07. Then there's a, embedded in this number is a 17-month health match delay. And that saves the general fund $7 million in 06, $104 million in 07. That's a total of $138 million. And then, as Senator Berglund mentioned earlier, there's some adjustment made.
I'm sorry, Mr. Godfrey, mm-hmm. I thought you said 7 and 104. Did I hear that wrong?
yes, maybe I'm rounding incorrectly. Let me just...
Unless, did you add that 27 from the other...
Just a moment. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yeah. That's correct. What I did was we have $27 million of savings from the reform.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Representative Wilkins?
Could the gentleman point out to where these numbers are at on the spreadsheet, or are they on the spreadsheet?
Well, I can, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkins, I can provide a more detailed spreadsheet. I've just hidden those lines for simplicity's sake on this spreadsheet. The numbers I'm giving you, though, are the ones that you would see if those were unhidden.
I'm sorry, Mr. Godfrey, go ahead. Back to merging. The 148 then is a combination of what?
Oh, yes. Well, let's just begin. Mr. Chair, let's just begin again just so we're clear on this because I know there's a great deal of interest in this. The reform plan in 07 says saves $27 million. Set that aside. Then we have a 17-month health match delay, which saves $7 million in 06, and then $104 million in 07. When you add up those three items, it's $138 million, roughly. Then, as Senator Berglund had mentioned, we will be making a small adjustment to the premium tax transfer to the general fund, which is a cost to the general fund of $6 million in 07. And so when you net that out, you have $132 million savings attributable to both the reform plan and the health match delay. So that explains the general fund number. And I can go through the health care access fund costs if you'd like, the $131 million. That's helpful.
Let me hang on a sec. Let me, if I may, just sort of catch up now. I think I've got that one figured out. Okay. The health match, just so that I'm on the right track here of understanding the policy interactions, the health match delay there, what that savings must come from them is the assumption that the presumed movement of people from the Minnesota Care to MA would then be deferred or delayed. That's where that would come from?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. We're assuming a 17-month delay that would be basically recognized legislatively.
Okay. Now, so that's going to have then a corresponding cost in the health care access fund. If I remember in prior proposals, it was very close to the cost, it was slightly less probably, and without really necessarily getting too hung up, because maybe if you can provide us with the follow-up with some of more detail. But in concept, I'm assuming that there's an expense on the health care access fund side that's fairly close to that. Mr. Godfrey, is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Now, I haven't tried to trace. I noticed that you do have a health care access fund. At one point in time in the prior, before adjustments for this health care match, the health match program, I thought the Senate was fairly close in terms of the balance that was available, because it looks to me like you're going to be somewhere over $100 million of potential health care access fund expenditure because of that delay and because of the cost there. So how does the balance look in the health care access fund if you're picking up that much additional expense? Mr. Godfrey,
we have the sheet here.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I haven't caught up in looking at it all.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Godfrey?
Would you like me to walk through this just quickly?
Yeah, why don't we do that, if you would, please. Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, this is the Health Care Access Fund, based on the Senate's current position. I'll just point out by line number where some changes have been made. Beginning under beginning at line 35, under grant expenditures, you'll notice that there are a number of zeros now where there used to be costs. These are the costs for the Minnesota Care Option for Small Employers program, that which would be on lines 35 through 37, that have now been removed and are no longer part of the Senate position. And then if you go to line 45, you'll notice the increased eligibility change for adults without children to 190 has been removed, and that's no longer part of the Senate position. And then going to line 48, you'll see the program costs for the health match, a 17-month delay beginning in 07, and then going through, beginning in 06, the $6.4 million. And then going through 09, where they taper off and basically are no longer exist going into the third biennium. And then on line 49, you'll see the cost for the Senate health care reform plan that has the January 1st of 07 effective date, with the cost of $31 million in 07. And so those are the changes on the expenditure side. If you then go down to line 70 and 71, this is the line for the provider tax, gross premium tax, that is transferred to the general fund. We make a small adjustment, as Senator Berglund mentioned, in 07, a reduction of that amount from the current law of $6 million. Then we have a small general fund transfer to the health care access fund in 08, and which is then repaid in 09. And this is very similar to a mechanism that the governor uses in his budget. However, we don't do it do as much of that transfer as the governor does. And then moving then to the back page, the only change that's been made on this side of the sheet is line 81. And this will show you the balance of the fund through the next two bienniums. You see that at the end of 06, there's a balance of $41.9 million, and then a zero balance all the way through fiscal year 09.
Excellent. Thank you. That was very helpful. Are there any other questions from Representative Wilkin?
Mr. Chairman, maybe Senator Berglund can answer this. Looking at the proposal here, it shows a 17-month delay in implementing Health Match. I thought the department was proposing a 12-month delay. And what would be the reason for the difference there?
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilkin, the reform proposal itself causes a delay. So we're not creating a delay just for budgeting purposes, but proposal itself causes a delay.
Representative Wilkin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, maybe you could explain a little bit more about the health reform plan. Maybe I'm dense and I don't get it, but I don't get it. And I'm looking at the tails here, and it may be there's the $30 million in, I'm looking at line 49, there's $30 million in 07, but if you look at 08 and 09, the tails are huge, and I'm wondering if you could just explain that for me a little bit.
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilkin, the savings are correspondingly huge in the tails to the general fund. And it's because the proposal doesn't start until January 1st of 07, so, you know, it's in the middle of the biennium that it's starting, and it it would be fully operational in 08 and 09, so you see larger costs and corresponding, there would be larger savings for the general fund in the future biennium.
Maybe you could direct me to the line where the savings are showing just so I can connect the dots.
We didn't bring the future bienniums on this horizontal spreadsheet, but Mr. Godfrey can review it for you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wilkin, I will provide the committee with the tail spreadsheet that shows the impact of the Senate proposal for fiscal year 08-09, but just to give you an idea of the scale, the total cost for the healthcare access fund for the tails, which you could add up here, the total cost is approximately $390 million once we account for the changes in the premium tax transfer. And the savings to the general fund in the tails with the health match delay and the reform plan and accounting for the loss of the transfer funds would be approximately $460 million in savings in 08-09.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilkin, just to answer your earlier question, the reason that there has to be a delay in health match is because they have to reprogram it once they receive it so that it doesn't automatically put people that have moved from general assistance medical care into Minnesota care back into general assistance medical care. Program the way it is being developed right now would automatically kick people back into the general fund program, and the reform does not intend for that to happen. The reform intends for people to continue in Minnesota care. So there has to be an edit done to the program.
Okay, Senator Berglund or Mr. Godfrey, we did a nice job, I think, and helped, and I appreciate it on the $132 million. Can you take me to the $123, which is on the general fund sheet under offers, talks about $123 million, or what's called the undesignated reduction. Is there any further detail on that?
No.
Further questions from members? Representative Abel?
Sure, yeah, thank you. This is helpful. And I've been here too long. It's kind of interesting, too. So, just to help understand the short spreadsheet, the third group down is an all funds comparison. And so, just to help me understand, at the beginning, we were $442 million apart in an all fund comparison. That seems like about right. And then the final thing is with all those different offers. This would say that at this point we're $182 million apart in an all-fund comparison. Is that counting all these swaps back and forth in the healthcare access fund? And is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, yes, that's correct. Actually, it's really a $182 million general fund difference, but because both bodies now are the same on spending on healthcare access fund, it eliminates the all-funds comparison, really. And or at least the healthcare access fund general fund comparison when we add those together. So the difference is $182 million, and it's all general fund difference.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Godfrey, probably. So there are some dueling proposals in there, but never mind that, at least in terms of the money. And just an observation, I think the answer to the question before about where does the money come from, I think the original Senate offer, the bills left the floor when we had regular session, was related to the income tax and the foreign operating corporations. There was no tobacco tax, I don't think, in the original Senate. So the money would have come, the general funding source from the original bills would have been.
I do know this much to help out, and that is that there is no income tax paying for this bill.
Madam Chair, help me understand. Because the Senate proposals, which were don't know, a billion something above ours. I mean, you established targets. You passed a revenue bill, a tax bill, and, you know, raised money through different methods, and then you were given a human services target and education target and jobs and all those targets. And those, they were funded by the pots of money that the Senate had available. So it's not meant to be any impugning
right,
money.
Right. I just wanted to clarify that the offer that was made to the governor in the House yesterday removed any income tax increase for, you know, that would pay for any health and human services or education bill. So
let me just, now I'm confused.
Mr. Bergman?
I wasn't at the meeting, so they didn't invite me. I don't know why.
I wasn't at the meeting either, but I...
So I'm glad I was home. sheetrocking a wall. If the income tax, because I heard that they made it revenue neutral, so the income tax funded some other tax cuts. So there's still enough money then from the revenue streams that they brought forward. And wasn't one of those the tobacco fee then, which would have been just gone into the general pot, and then you would have gotten your share out of whatever streams, the FOCs and the tobacco money that was left over, just not allocated specifically? Would it be kind of just your non-allocated share of that kind of money?
You didn't have.
Is that correct, or am I no?
Senator Bergman?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler, at least at this point in time, none of the cigarette tax money is allocated for a specific part of the budget.
Right, I appreciate that. Maybe Senator Hottinger has an idea.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hottinger.
I think Representative Abler is correct in the sense that the Senate proposal is based on the fungible money, wherever it comes from. And in maybe the most bizarre proposal of a already bizarre dance in trying to settle this budget, the Senate apparently has proposed, and I wasn't there either, but as reported in the press, apparently proposed that the income tax proposal of the Senate would not be used for education, would not be used for health care, which was the idea behind it in the first place, and would be used to give tax cuts to businesses, to married couples, and to higher middle income families. That makes no sense to me, because if you believe, as I do, that there's a moral imperative to raise income taxes, which I know the House disagrees with, you don't spend it to give tax cuts to others. We are now in a position that the fungible money available for health care doesn't include the income tax, but does include the other things that were in the Senate proposal. And I think what this horizontal sheet represents is the fact that the Senate proposal has $255 million in budget cuts out of the general fund, and that that's a significant reduction from the original Senate bill. I think that's the primary point that this is trying to make.
So, Mr. I have one more question, then I think
Mr. I'm... Mr. Weber?
Just I'm trying to digest this. So was, and Senator Bergman, so was there a surplus in the health care access fund under your proposal? You used that to buy back the benefits, right?
There was no surplus
in
the health care access fund.
Okay, I think I've got it squared. Thank you. This is helpful.
Just to see if I'm on the bottom line in terms of whatever the sources are, not so much focusing on that, but from what I can tell from a combined health care access fund, general fund, that the only sort of, if you will, spending reduction really is the $123 million. Now, there, I believe there's a little bit more because you realize some actual savings by the transfers between the healthcare, between Minnesota Care and General Assistance Medical Care in your proposal. I understand that. But it would appear to me the rest of it is handled by revenue sources of whatever they are. And one that is, in fact, identified is the $100 million. One of the things that I was trying to figure out is not where they are, but how much they are. And I'm wondering if Mr. Godfrey, if you can give me kind of the combined number of the $100 million that I can see fairly clearly. The rest of it I can't really see, aside from I could back into it by saying if there's $123 million of savings only, and then maybe a little bit the rest of it. But it would seem to me that the Senate would need somewhere around $400 million of revenue to fill the hole. 100 of it's identified,
so then it would be somewhere around $300 million. Now, Mr. Godfrey, can you, again, I don't care about where it comes from, but maybe part of a global agreement, but just give me the sort of the size of the revenue requirements that this proposal has.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll do my best here to tackle that. I think, you, Representative Bradley, you've identified the $100 million tobacco tax that's showing the, up there as the governor's office offer. We have the reductions of 123. The Senate actually also, this health care access fund reduction is a true reduction in the Senate's health care access fund spending. And what that enables the Senate to do then is to use the $131 million in spending of that you see on the last line, the health care access fund health match reform plan line. That $131 million is essentially represents money that was or is now surplus money in the health care access fund for this purpose. And so that is, I would suggest, a revenue source.
But Mr. Godfrey, in terms of budget, you might almost consider that one-time money, if it's used in a surplus, that wouldn't be available for subsequent biennials, if I'm hearing you right. Am I sort of correct in that?
Representative Bradley, it's permanent surplus. It's not one-time surplus. It's
That's an ongoing revenue, meaning the
right.
Okay,
that
all right.
Keeps coming in, and
okay, that's right. I stand corrected, and I
okay.
accept that. Sure, thank you.
And so, Mr. Chair, members, so after looking at the revenue, I'll just call them revenue sources of the tobacco tax, and then the health care access fund that's used, that source of funds, then we're left with $156 million difference in. It would be my interpretation of this spreadsheet that $156 million number is the amount of, that's our difference. In order to, for the Senate plan to go into effect completely, we would need $156 million of revenue, which my understanding is available through the global Senate plan in terms of revenues that it has
right,
on the
right.
table at this time.
Okay. So that would be a total then of $387 million or so. Amongst those three sources that you just mentioned.
Representative Bradley, really, there isn't that much difference between the way the governor gets his general fund savings from the health care access fund and the way the Senate does it, except that there are structural differences. The Senate proposal is trying to take a portion of the general assistance medical care population and create a medical home for them so that when they get the health care they need, they come into the program in crisis usually, they get the health care they need, that they would continue getting the health care they needed to stay out of crisis. And they would be working more and paying more taxes and paying premiums and being in the Minnesota Care program like other Minnesota Care clients are. But in terms of the impact it has on the general fund, it isn't any different. The governor, in arriving at his 759 number in the beginning, used savings that he generated from the health care access fund to reduce the general fund spending.
Senator Bergen, I think you're right. I think that both of these proposals, in a sense, use the health care access fund money to protect the health care safety net. And in that respect, done differently, I understand. But in a sense, from a pure fiscal point of view, that is sort of a wash. I think that's a fair
and
point.
So, Mr. Chairman, I just have to kind of underscore that because for some reason, over the past several weeks that we've been discussing how to resolve the budget differences, it's been discounted or disregarded by some people in the House as not being real money or not being a real savings. And I contend that it is as real a savings as the governor had in his proposal.
The only thing I would point on that regard, Senator Bergen, until recently, and now I see that there are actual program changes in the healthcare access from before that, when that 131 was being addressed and used. It appeared as though it was in addition to other sources of revenue, so that would be that, there is a change now, I realize. I would like to share with the Senate a very serious House offer at this point. So if we can have that distributed, please. And by the way, my thanks, Senator Berglund and Mr. Godfrey, for a good review. And if you can follow up with some of those details, I'd appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask those of you in the audience, I'm hoping we have enough copies, but I would ask, because our time is short enough that I'm going to need to get started here reviewing it, if we can be pretty orderly in taking the copies. Let's go ahead. Yeah. Okay, if I may, I believe members currently have it, and I think this is structured in a hopefully a very straightforward, understandable way. So let me preface this by telling members that this is a very sincere offer. We tried very hard in putting this together to provide coverage on some of the key issues that we hear about. We did it within, and I'll be very clear with you exactly what the revenue sources are, so there's no question about that. And then I'll show you exactly also. It's important to note that this is simplified by the fact that what I'm doing is taking from the existing House bill, which is now in House File 3, and as was it was passed, and House File 1422 originally. So the numbers here are strictly and only revenue increases or savings that add to what's available to us, and then spending or investments against where the current House proposal is. So that's what it amounts to. Let me take you through, first of all, the revenues that the House proposal is putting on the table. First of all, and this is roughly, whether it's exactly 20-cent fee on wholesale tobacco, we're not quite sure, but it's very close to that. That would raise the $100 million revenue that happens to match what has been around for some time, but it makes it clear what we're proposing is that it come from that approximately 20-cent. We also adopted, and actually we even passed this in the Appropriations Bill. The House accepted a Senate proposal. So this would be a change, obviously, from the House proposal of another $6 million of savings by some reforms on personal care attendant services. We had an update from the Department of Human Services on our prior authorization work that added another $1.7 million. The Senate had a good idea that, to be honest, we picked up on, which is in the prescription drug program grant account. There was money left in there, so we did the same thing in taking that ongoing money. And then we did adopt in this proposal, and we'll see how we spend it, but this implies really the Department of Human Services GAMC DISH proposal, which if you recall, $22 million. So that's a total of $145 million approximately of additional revenues. We have tried to invest those in the areas that we think are important to the Senate as well as our constituents, and let me walk through those with you. The first thing that the House proposes is that we restore much of the Minnesota care eligibility. We've been sort of included this, but we put together here, which we think is sort of a balanced one by making some other investments too. But in this proposal, we're suggesting that we restore the eligibility of adults without children to 150% of poverty. As you're aware, the proposal that the House had removed eligibility altogether. So that's a restoration of 150%. The parents or caretakers were proposing to restore from the House's 175% to 225% of federal poverty levels. and that cost us $74 million to do that. You recall also that the House had a proposal to count up to $200 of a housing benefit against the infant payment. We're proposing to reduce that to $100 at a cost of $11.6 million. We're also proposing to add, if you will, sort of a child care COLA. This would be a 2% per year for the next biennium. That would total $17 million additional investments in the child care area. We're suggesting a way to help persons who are living on a 79 or approximately in that range personal needs allowance as a way to help them in the cases where they do have high co-pays for their medical assistance to increase their personal needs allowance by $20. The next one is an outright repeal of the $500 dental cap at a cost of $2.3 million. The report the COLA provider said is just simply, and this happens to us once in a while, I think that we had omitted one or two of the typical provider groups, and so that's catching it up to make sure that our provider COLA for nursing homes and others is comprehensive and complete, and that cost us $600,000. We are taking care of the diabetic supplies issue on the limited benefit set. That cost us $800,000. We're proposing to reduce, and this is, if you will, sort of connected back to that DISH payment. We're proposing to reduce the proposed 5% rate reduction for hospitals by 1%. That costs us $11 million. The advantage it has, however, is that we get a federal match in that, so that brings that match up very close to the hospital proposal of raising $25 million. We also propose to raise the COLA. We all, I think, were hopeful of getting higher than the 2.25 that we were at. We can't do much more, but we can invest $9 million and we can attain a level of 2.5% for the whole long-term and continuing care group of providers. We would also propose, that's a cost of $9 million, we would also propose to spend $1.8 million to restore the pharmacy reimbursement rate. Our proposal had adopted AWP minus 12%, which would have been 0.5% reduction in their rate. We're proposing to restore that to the current law. And then rather than sort of try to juggle things and so forth, it turned out in the balance that there's another $2.7 million available, which if we as a group between the House and the Senate would find other places or adjustments, we're certainly open to those, but that gives us at least $2.7 million. And I also believe, frankly, and this is a genuine piece of work that we've tried to be very thorough, but it doesn't mean that it's the only. There may be some additional savings that if we put our heads together, there may be even some adjustments that we make. We have really tried genuinely to put in front of the Senate and the public a proposal here that we think is balanced in terms of where the revenue sources are and balanced in terms of trying to deal with some of the need areas that face this committee. So we offer this. I realize, I think, that we're going to be going into sessions now, and I would certainly wish that we'd be able to come back and discuss this. Senator Bogan.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question about this proposal, and that is, was it incorrect then what was reported in the paper about the offer that was made from the governor's office on Saturday to the Senate that all of the Minnesota Care eligibility cuts would be restored?
Senator Bergman, that may have been stated, and I've even stated that myself as a possibility repeatedly, actually, and been a little surprised that I haven't had acceptance. If you look at this collection of investments here, we could do that. It might mean that we would have to adjust some of the other investments, but in working hard as a team, what we try to do is to say, although the Minnesota Care eligibility is important, and we could completely restore the eligibility, however, there are other needs as well. And since we didn't have any acceptance of those, at least to the extent when I've suggested them, this is sort of a way to put it in front of us. And if the Senate would prefer that we do that as an alternative to some of the other things that are being done. We're open to that discussion, but this represents, I think, just a progression. I still believe that we could do that. You can see that there's enough money to do that. To be perfectly exact to you, the $74 million that you see there in front of you buys back eligibilities, if you will, or maintains eligibilities to these levels. In order to maintain eligibility per current law, it would be $91 million. So as we talk about, as you would like to suggest things, I guess what you'd keep in mind is that that would be probably another, $17 million or something like that in order to attain that, if that's a desire. And we're open to suggestions. But this, we think, is a balanced approach to that issue plus others.
Representative Bradley, one of the reasons that the vague discussion about buying back eligibility has not been accepted is because it's been just that. It's been vague, alluded to in vague discussions. There's never been a concrete proposal. Originally, the governor said he wasn't indicating where the $100 million he was adding to his budget would be spent. There have been, it's been alluded to in various discussions, but there's never been anything in writing. I assumed that what was in the paper over the weekend indicated something had been put in writing, although I haven't actually seen it except what I read in the paper. So this is the first time I've seen anything in writing, and it doesn't buy back all of the eligibility cuts that were indicated was in the offer in the paper on Saturday. So that was my question, is whether that offer was a genuine offer or whether it was a partial offer or whether the offer is now being retracted in part.
Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was here all weekend and I saw the offers, and since the governor first put the money on the table at regular session, there has been $100 million that this committee could spend, which would restore that in full, Senator Berglund. And as we were sitting around waiting for the call from Senator Johnson, who appeared to be out of state, and we were waiting in vain on Sunday, we started asking some questions about money and what would happen in the event of a shutdown. And I think the members of this committee, and I have great respect for my Senate colleagues that are on this committee and the constituency groups that are here, need to understand that once we go into shutdown, we're going to be losing off the table $4.68 million a day. That doesn't even begin to start counting the savings that are in the budget in these documents that won't accrue because we're not passing the bill in time. Now, the documents that I saw, Senator, did say restoration of Minnesota Care. What Representative Bradley has tried to do here is take some of those dollars, address the most acute concerns on Minnesota Care that we think you have, maybe not do full restoration, but there's some other needs in other areas here. And Representative Bradley, I think, has reached out in things that maybe not areas where I would spend them, but he's looked at across the aisle and what your top concerns are and tried to address them with this money. And as we go, we're about midday here, 2 days away from shutdown. Keep in mind that the money that has been put on the table by the governor, I think the House would pass it, I think the Senate would pass it, but the deal isn't going to get any sweeter. And as we go further into the week, remember, $4.68 million a day is off the table.
Senator Bergman, for me also, because I think your statement was sort of directed at me, and it's a fair statement, and let me suggest something, and that is that if the Senate likes this proposal less the Minnesota Care eligibility issue, if that's what it would take $17 million more, and we could wrap up and shake hands and go put the bill together. I think I can tell you I can figure out ways to do that, and I might even be able to do it without even changing the other elements. So I understand your point. It's a point well taken. I mean, we've been discussing the eligibility questions over some time. But I would sort of say the history isn't nearly as important to me as looking forward. And if the Senate it would say this is a great offer, if you can fill that gap, then we ought to figure out a way to do that, and I'm prepared to work with you to do that. Senator Berglin.
Representative Bradley, I am just trying to figure out where this proposal puts us in terms of the global discussions that are taking place. And I'm trying to figure out whether it's a backward step or whether it's kind of an errant kind of proposal that's out there on the side and the original negotiations are still on track. I'm just trying to figure that out because that'll be the first question that my fellow work group members will be asking me and Senator Johnson when we go back to our floor session at noon today.
Sure. Fair enough. Senator Berman, I went to the speaker on this and said, you know, make sure you tell me exactly what the ground rules. And his statement was simply this, that it is clearly at this point on the table that you are authorized to put forward proposals that anticipate the $100 million of revenue. Now, there's one specific, but it could come from other places. I chose to sort of frame it this way because I think it's clear to do it. I think some of the other committees have been doing it as well. And that was really the only condition. The suggestion about the Minnesota Care eligibility has been something sort of floated. And as I said, if that's the issue, if that's the single issue for closure, I'm absolutely willing to continue our work in these next hours and to figure out how we deal with that. So, Senator Berglin, I think, yes, it is consistent with the global agreements as I understand them. And it certainly has, from my point of view, the blessings of the speaker who has been a party to all of those global negotiations.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hottinger?
Well, Senator Berglin can proceed with that, but I would like to have a question and a comment.
Sure. I'm sorry. Senator Berglin?
Mr. Chairman, then just one other question, and that is that the House must then feel comfortable moving forward with the limited benefit set exclusive of the diabetic supplies being restored so that you feel comfortable having women who come into this program, some of whom get breast cancer, not being able to get radiation treatment. You feel comfortable with that?
Well, Senator Berglin, I'm comfortable with making the best decisions we can within resources. And I had anticipated that eligibility was a first priority. We cannot take care of every reform buyback. If you have some notions within it, you have some trade-off suggestions. But as a start point, I will admit that I felt as though reaching out with $74 million of investment to maintain eligibility was a priority. And, for example, the cap, which has a significant expense, the combined limited benefit sense cap, is an expense that, frankly, I couldn't cover within these monies.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Eber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Berglin. Did you want to say something?
I just had one other question then, Mr. Chairman. How much money would you be transferring under this proposal to the general fund out of the Health Care Access Fund?
Senator Berglin, if you recall our, because we haven't changed anything, there's nothing different in here. The House's proposal essentially had a zero balance, so there's no more room for transferring. Now, the health match delay places a different dynamic, and what we're proposing to do there is to allow the freedom to exchange between the general fund and the healthcare access fund as is required to protect our overall health safety nets. In that dynamic, in the best that we can tell at this point with the health match, its net impact is looks like less than $2 million after we restore this eligibility. So it really is a very small amount, almost imperceptible in terms of the balance. So we would just continue to use the resources necessary between the general fund and the healthcare access fund to protect our safety nets.
So, Representative Bradley, does that mean that you are still proposing to move the entire General Assistance Medical Care Program into Minnesota Care?
Senator Bergman, I haven't figured out. For the time being, we haven't changed that. It really doesn't make too much difference if you're balancing it and trying to protect as we are. I'm a little bit open. I think you have a different kind of solution. We have preferred so far to keep the GAMC overall intact, and I don't know whether two-thirds of the people will really pay their premiums and do those other kinds of things in Minnesota Care. I'm open to some discussion on that, but the answer to your question is yes, we do leave it.
Mr. Chair?
Well, we would like to see, Mr. Chairman, then, we would like to see a spreadsheet like we've given you today on how you make that work and how you make that balance out.
I can almost show you the language, because the language is just an enabling language that allows us to move the money back and forth in order to balance things, and the net expenses haven't changed outside of these expenses. So it works that way, but I'll see what we can do to accommodate. Representative Abler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to...
Senator Hottinger had been next. I mean, respect that. I'm sorry.
I appreciate the effort to put some additional information in front of us. I think it moves us a tiny bit closer, because the tobacco fee had already been incorporated in the summary that we've used based on previous global offers. So it's a start, and I appreciate Representative Wilkin reminding us that we have government shutdown. It doesn't improve the chances of getting an acceptable outcome. It makes it in many ways more difficult, especially for the people who we're supposed to represent and who are dependent upon these programs. My question is on the increased child care maximum rate, an area I have interest in because that's the jurisdiction of my committee. I assume the 2% proposal is off the freeze level. I think the House maintains the freeze, so this is off of that, as opposed to the budget forecast number, which, of course, there is no freeze.
Senator Hunter, as I indicated at the start, all of these proposals are off the current House proposal, and you're right in that statement.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Bergman. I hope that if I could urge all of us to attempt to come to some resolution, I think it would be a good thing. I think that as you talk back and forth, I think this is one of our more healthy discussions we've had in dialogues, and I think seeing your ideas fleshed out, healthier access fund and understanding the nuance of that, and I think you've heard the Chair Bradley say he's open to some of that, but I think what you see in the House is a willingness and a desire to broaden back some of that. Some of these are just hard decisions to make with budgeting. I do want to remind the Senate, though, and Senator Hottinger and his fungible money, that's a great term, by the way, that the tax proposal the Senate brought out originally for the income tax only got 15 votes in the House. And what we're bringing forward here is a proposal we can pass. And if you think we can pass more money, then, you know, push that number wherever you think you can push it to. At the end of the day, we're limited by what we can pass off either House with getting the income parts. And some of the choices we've made about the freeze on the child care, none of us like these choices. But we've made hard decisions and tried to balance it out. And so I just would implore the Senate side as well as the House to keep working and to look at the intent and the positive parts of all this, because I think we can get this done. And I think that I appreciate the both work and both of you being so attentive today. Thank you.
Well, I respect. I believe the Senate's going to session now. What I would suggest is we will recess to the call of the chair. But let's assume. Is there any indication in the Senate of what your anticipation for the length of the Senate session is?
I don't really know, Mr. Chairman, but I do know that we're having a caucus after the session.
Yeah, and we are at 2:00. So why don't we put it at 1.5 hour after the? Well, it would be typically, I guess, it would be the House.
There may be a Rules Committee today. I don't know.
Well, we'll have to be a little bit flexible. So we'll make it to the call of the chair, but aiming for half an hour after the House concludes. We're in recess. We'll restart our meeting. We were in recess, so we'll restart the meeting. And I um,
I mean, I'm not sure where to start other than to perhaps suggest that we start. We did have a specific offer on the table. The Senate had just had a barely chance to see it. I know there were a couple of comments I indicated to you, Senator Berglund, that if the issue were the eligibility, we could shake hands, and I could assure you I could come back in an hour with a proposal that would take care of that. But I would be interested, now that you've had a longer opportunity to view it, for a Senate reaction to the House offer. If Senator Berglund, if you do have any...
We don't have any reaction at this time.
Well, I would suggest at least this much, and I mean, perhaps all that's been said, Senator Berglund and members of the Senate, I think we all know that, as I believe Representative Wilken pointed out, that there's a lot at stake in many kinds of ways with a shutdown imminent, not the least of which is losing actual costs that will reduce the amount of money that could be available. I hope we also realize that we do believe that this package and what it depends on in a global agreement can be passed in, certainly in the House, and I would hope in the Senate as well. And I hope that that we'll be able to have a concluding discussion. I'm a little, frankly, worried. I mean, if Senator Berglund, if you needed a recess and wanted to come back the evening, I think the House members would be willing to do that. Because I do think that the clock is ticking on us, and we need to move on it. So I would offer that and ask what would be your suggestion from here.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that we're in a position to negotiate a target for ourselves in this conference committee. I believe those discussions are taking place. And so I believe it would be premature for us to be making a counteroffer to your offer today.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Wilken.
You know, there's always scuttlebutt in the hall about this and that, and I was under the impression a couple of weeks ago that the, from the Senate standpoint, that the committee finance chairs were empowered to set their own targets, and that the plan was for Senator Pogemiller to accommodate whatever target was negotiated, and that he just raised whatever money he needed to. Now, has that changed? And also, has there been something that has changed where the Senate's planning to do a lights-on proposal? Because I heard that passed out of the Senate Rules Committee.
Senator Berglund, can you speak to that, please?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wilken, at this time the Senate is willing to come down $254 million. If you want to negotiate around coming up from the governor's number, $155 million, I guess we could do that. In regard to continuing the orderly process of state government, there have been a couple of bills that have passed other rules committee that might allow that to happen in various areas of the budget, but there's been no decision made about when or if those bills will be taken up on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah. Representative Wilken?
Mr. Chair, my understanding is that $255 million all funds, or is that just general fund with an offset from the health care access fund, or what numbers are we talking here?
Senator Berglund?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wilken, that is why we asked some questions this morning regarding the governor's proposal. As far as we can tell, we believe that we're about $50 million apart in terms of the Healthcare Access Fund, and that would be of the $155 million. We believe that it's important to members of the Senate not only to restore eligibility, but also to restore the benefit set that is in the proposal that the Senate made. regarding our offer to come down $154 million. You know, we are obviously concerned about other parts of the bill, of the governor's cuts also, although we've made a lot of them. We've made a lot of them. And obviously, with the number that we've offered, we would be making more of them. So I don't know if that's what you meant by we can set our own target. I'm just not sure, but...
Representative Wilken.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Berglund, I had just heard early on that the Senate approach was to set the targets for each bill, whereas the House approach was to set the overall spending target, and now you're saying that you can't set your own target. I'm pleased if we do an overall spending target, because I think that's the more responsible way to go. But within the proposal outlined by Chairman Bradley, it seems like there is enough room if he put this out there trying to address many of the different needs and hot spots in the budget for the Senate. But if you came back with a proposal within this parameter, you could easily fund what you wanted to on buying up the limited benefit set, buying up the cap, or what have you. There's dollars there. You just have to make choices. And it seems we're at the point of time where we have to make our choices, or, as I said before, the dollars are going to start diminishing once shutdown hits, and it's all going to come from this committee, because I don't think either body's going to take it from K-12. The K-12 dollars are very, very close, so everybody's going to focus on this committee, and we're going to be losers, and we're going to have a lot harder work to do if we're here next week versus we're here this today. And I think if the members of this committee went to leadership and said we can work within these parameters, the whole budget would be sewn up in a hurry, and we'd be processing bills rather than haggling with offers back and forth.
And I likewise believe that. I believe, frankly, if we could complete our work within these parameters, that we could hand the work to the leadership, leadership who's doing the more global. And I think Representative Wilken's right. I think everything would fall in place. These numbers are within levels whereby I think all sides can ultimately agree and give us the latitude. By deferring it and saying that we wait for a higher target, I think what we risk is we risk going into the next phases. This is an opportunity. I mean, I think we sit here at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, not much more than 48 hours away from a pretty significant event called a partial shutdown. We have an opportunity, and if we choose not to, I guess that's what it would have to be. But we do, I believe, have an opportunity to accept something within this range, to pass that on to leadership, and I think Representative Wilken is right. I think if we did that within these parameters, we would find completion of this session within a matter of hours, and then we'd be back into the details of processing, which of course takes a considerable amount of time, but framing it out and completing it would be something that we could do in a short order. But the opportunity for that particular piece is, it's almost like it's now, or it isn't going to happen. So I guess what I'm hearing, Senator Berger, if there's nothing different, is that we're not prepared to seize that opportunity. And if the Senate is insisting that even more has to be spent, then I think we move into the next phase, which almost means that we're paralyzed as a work group until there's a growing agreement. Now, I guess I want to make sure that I've heard right, is that are you declaring really that we're at an inability to move any further as far as budget negotiations until we get a target from the leadership group? Senator Berglund?
Well, Representative Bradley, you know, the Senate has made several attempts to try to resolve some of the language issues that we've been working on, and at least as far as I can tell at this point in time, we haven't been able to do that. We feel disappointed about that, but we certainly believe that there's work left for this conference work group to do. It just doesn't seem like moving to trying to resolve budget numbers when we don't have any targets would be a less than productive thing for us to be doing at this point in time.
Well, I'm disappointed to hear that, because I think there is an opportunity for us to sort of name the target, but I guess so be it. That being the case, Representative Abler?
May I just ask a clarifying couple questions, Senator? May I just, you made some comment about some numbers. Can I just understand those in the context of what you said so I can just, my information? You talked about $254 million, and would that be connected to this spreadsheet somehow, just so I can understand what you said? Is that all reflected in here, or is that something beyond?
Yes, it is reflected in here.
Senator Bowman.
Would that be the basis? Would that be the offer, or the bottom line already incorporates that? Is that what you were saying?
If you take the 123 that we were talking about this morning in terms right. of general fund reductions, and you take the 132 and you add them together,
oh.
that's the number that the Senate has come down. It leaves us 156 apart, we believe, from the governor, at least, and we believe approximately 50 of that is in healthcare access fund
All right.
differences.
All right, well, that helps. I just was trying to understand. So thank you for that clarification.
Any further discussion from members? Senator Berglund, want to announce any plans that you might have for a subsequent meeting, and maybe an idea even of what might be in the agenda?
Well, the Senate is going into session tomorrow at noon. I don't know whether we'll have a target number by then. I don't know if the House believes it would be possible for us to make any more progress on any of the language. So I guess I would say at this point that the meeting would be at the call of the chair.
And just for your information, Senator Bergman, I believe the House is in session at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. At this point, I'm not quite sure what the business might be, but that's the time frame.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
More questions just of the Senator. Would the call of the chair likely not be in the morning then? Would you think it would likely be after we're through with our sessions, or you just don't know?
Really, it just really depends on what the situation is.
Well, the situation's fluid, right?
With that, there being no further business and no further discussion, we're adjourned.